Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm John Connors, your host. I'm also the founder of Connors Martial Arts here in Norwood. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin.
How you doing, John?
Good, man. How you doing?
Great.
Dan, we have a first today. We have a call-in guest, phone-in guest.
Yeah, we'll see how this goes, right?
So the first time it's a phone-in, but I'll give you a little intro and then I'll introduce him. It's another mixed martial arts fighter. So this guy was our professional MMA fighter. You know, we had Tom Egan in here before. Who else? Jesse McGillicott.
John Howard.
John Doomsday Howard. And so this guy is a former MMA fighter. He's also a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor, and he's also an MMA coach. And he's a great martial artist. And his name is Mike Gresh. How you doing, Mike?
Excellent, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How'd you like that intro? Did I leave anything out?
No, that was wonderful, man. That was wonderful.
I know this morning you were teaching a jiu-jitsu class at Sit Your Tongue in Somerville.
Yes, sir. So at 10 o'clock, I teach every other Saturday.
Nice.
Because I'm on the Cape. It's a long ride.
Right,
and I teach an hour class, and we have a good group of guys and girls. It's fun, man.
And you're also at Junico.
Yes, sir. I teach at Junico. We have a location in Hanover, Mass., and we also have one on the Cape in Hyannis, Mass.
And where do you spend most of your time there? Which one, Mike? Both?
I split, John. I split 2 days in Hanover and 2 days in Hyannis. I take Wednesdays off, and then I'm with Crew Mark for the other times at Sit Your Tongue.
Awesome.
Always busy.
That's great, man. And yes, sir. And you've been a martial artist for a long time. We were just talking about this.
Yes, you're
in your 50s now. Yes, you're still a young whippersnapper. We figured that out. But we like to talk to people about when they started the whole thing. Like when, Mike, when did you first realize that there was such a thing as fighting? Like, you know, were you in kindergarten and somebody took your cookie and you had to punch him in the face?
We touched a little on it earlier, but I grew up my first 9 years in Brockton, Mass., and it's known as a rough city.
Home of Rocky Marciano, right?
Yeah, it was like when my mom and my mom was born there and lived there, and it was a great time in the 50s and 60s, 40s and 50s. It was a great city, and then when the shoe industry crapped out, it kind of, you know, it was, you know, it just kind of went down the tube. So I was there my first 9-10 years, and it was always seemed like I was, you know, at school or after school, always fighting. You know what I mean? And so my mom moved us out of Brockton to the Cape, and my dad put me in a martial arts program to keep me grounded.
Now, when you were in the Cape, it was less fighting in the neighborhood or school.
Oh, yeah. It was the Cape in 73. It was like when the summer closed, it was like literally they would roll up the walkway.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like very, very, wasn't like it is today. Very sparse, you know what I mean? Not populated.
Now, were you ever bullied as a kid? Do you remember anything when you were in Brockton? No.
No, I wasn't bullied. I wasn't bullied, but I just think I was probably, you know, I don't know what you would call now, but very aggressive, I would assume, you'd say.
You were an aggressive kid.
Aggressive kid. A good kid. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't a troubled kid, but.
Right. You had a lot of energy.
Just aggressive. I would have a lot of energy. That's a better way to put it. I don't think aggressive is probably the way to put it. Probably a lot of energy, John.
So you think you ended up fighting with more, like, butting heads with other aggressive kids?
Yeah, that's all.
And
a lot of fun.
And then you took karate.
Yes, my dad enrolled me into a Weichiru karate, which is an Okinawan style karate, in Falmouth, Mass. And literally, we were the only martial arts school on Cape Cod in 1973, and probably for a few years.
Very cool.
And those are the best years of my life, if I remember correctly. You know what I mean?
And who was the instructor?
His name, he's still alive. He's a great man. His name is Sensei Alfa Rabisa. He's a Portuguese fella, and he was a semi-pro football player. Legit badass.
I bet.
And a special needs kid. He really was a great guy because on his second job, he was, his first job, he was a special needs student in Falmouth High School. So he was an awesome guy, but he was a guy that demanded respect, and he was a very fair man, a scary guy, but, you know, very fair also. Like, you didn't go into that class and just start running around acting goofy.
Right.
You would go in there, you would bow on the mats, and you would wait in a stance waiting for him. Like, you know, how many kids are on the mats? We had a very small group of kids, 7 to 10 kids. There was no running around acting stupid in there, I'll tell you that much.
And did they do sparring back then in Okinawa karate?
We did a lot. That was, see, Arthur Ribisa was an original Iron Man in full contact karate. This is probably a little before the time for Superfoot. John, you remember these guys,
yeah.
Superfoot, Bill Wallace, and that whole scene came on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was, the karate tournaments in the 70s, it was like, it was full contact events in the black belt division. It was very, very serious competition. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No shin pads, no gloves. It was real.
That's pretty cool.
So we did a lot of sparring as a kid, as children, and we learned a lot. And it was a great time to be alive and to be training in martial arts. You know, the Bruce Lee was just coming into, you know, the Enter the Dragon and all those movies.
Yeah.
Remember Billy Jack? Billy Jack
was
around
that
time.
The best, right?
Was that good stuff, man? Billy Jack, John? Was that great or what?
I'm going to take my right foot and I'm going to whop you up on the right side of your head.
Yes.
And there's not a goddamn thing
you're
going to
do
about it.
Really? Yeah, really? Whack. And
whack.
The funny part of that is everybody thought that Tom Laughlin, the actor who's passed now, Rustin Power, was the, he did train. But
yeah.
It was a gentleman by the name, I don't know if you guys know this trivia, but his name was Bong Soo Han. He was a Korean Hapkido black belt, way ahead of his time. His name was Bong, you can research it, Bong Soo Han. And as soon as I saw that movie, that was the first martial arts movie that I ever saw. It was Billy Jack. Before Bruce Lee, I was like, oh, man. Got to do this stuff. Man.
I wonder what year that movie was. That was probably right around then, like 74 or something, right?
I would say it was. I think I started my karate training, and then I saw that movie, and it was just like, look at this. We got to jump on this stuff.
So
man.
You're saying that Tom Laughlin didn't do the actual scenes?
No,
the other guy did it.
Yeah, all the martial arts scenes, if you do the research on it, was Bong Soo Han, very famous Hapkido practitioner at the time.
It's funny, you don't hear a lot about Hapkido anymore, do you?
But it's a pretty cool art, right? It's like this, John, and you know, because what's beautiful about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and why it's so effective is because you use it against a resisting opponent.
Right.
It's not effective unless you're really trying to submit the other fella.
And the guy's trying real hard to not let you do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what makes it so effective, because now you got a trained opponent. So let's say we're blue belt level and above. You got a trained opponent that knows the basics, and you're trying to submit a guy. Now, how much easier is it out on the streets for a guy that knows nothing? And I always look at it like that. It's like, well, these guys don't train. We train. But going back to the Hapkido and the Aikido, listen, I think there's good in every martial art form.
Right.
I think there's some great practitioners in every martial art form. I don't think there's I don't think it's as effective, obviously, in the long run as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Right, like you're saying, you need that. You need
good,
that feedback.
You know?
You need that feedback of live training to really
hone
in what you're doing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Exactly. But there's no one better art form, I don't think. Because there's tough guys in every art form.
Right.
And UFC 1 really proved that, in a sense that there's some tough guys out there that are doing some forms of karate and some Aikido and some of the forms that, you know, like people laugh at today in MMA fights. But there's some good martial artists out there.
There are.
What I mean?
And some of them start there and then they go and they kickbox. And then they get into MMA, and they're like some of the best fighters, right? Like Style Bender.
Absolutely.
and Wonder Boy.
And it's like I've met like some serious tough guys coming out of kung fu systems.
Right.
People laugh. Oh, God, well, okay. I got a few guys I know personally. Well, go ahead, get a couple rounds with them. You're going to learn.
Right. So how long did you do karate down there for when you were a kid?
Oh, Well, as a child, I did karate probably. I trained with this gentleman up until 16 years old. Then I started researching probably 6 years. And then I started researching other martial arts. I fell in love with, always loved boxing.
Yep.
Always did. My home library at home is just filled with old boxing books. You know what I mean? I fell in love with boxing, you know?
Now, who are some of your favorite fighters all time?
My all-time favorite fighter has to be Sugar Ray Robinson, the original Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody, pound for pound, had all the tools that that great fighter, who his real name is Walker Smith, by the way. That was his ring name, was Sugar Ray Robinson. His real name was Walker Smith. And he was also a very famous dancer.
right.
He was a great dancer, and that's why you see some boxers are very good dancers. Isn't that odd?
Well, it seems like the guys with the best footwork, they win 9 times out of 10,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You got it, John. You've trained many champions yourself, and you know, like I always, one of my sayings is that amateurs fight up and back and forth, and professionals cut angles. And footwork is a huge part, obviously, of the angles. And, you know, like you were saying, footwork is everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that guy, Sugar Ray Robinson, he could do everything. He could box, he could slug, he had a variety of
punches. He could knock you out with either hand. He was nasty. And he won numerous world titles. He was probably the most complete fighter in the last 100 years. And I think a lot of boxing historians will put him in the top five, if not number one. They will have to put him in the top. Another great fighter who I loved a lot was the Pittsburgh Windmill, Harry Greb. And Harry Greb fought 60 fights blind, with one eye blind.
That's
Nobody
crazy.
Knew that.
That's crazy.
Is that amazing?
That's amazing.
Harry, you research Harry Greb, the Pittsburgh Windmill, and he was blind for over 60 matches. It isn't like today, John, where the commission and doctors are really on top of that stuff. You know what I mean? 60 fights with one eye. That's amazing, man.
60 fights is crazy. Never mind with two eyes. Never mind with one eye.
Exactly. And I would be, my main concern would be I don't want to get in the other eye. I could be blind.
That's true, right? Holy cow.
You know, so he was an amazing fighter.
And back then, I imagine, you get one little thumb in the eye and you tear a retina. They don't have the technology they have today. And
sure.
That could be it. Yeah.
And the gloves were horsehair, remember? It wasn't like the fine Corinthian leather we have today, or whatever you want to say it, with that padding. They were horsehair. And some of them trainers, they would take the hair out of there so you could feel the knuckles in there. These were tough men. They were fighting every other week, brother.
Unbelievable, every other week. Right? You know, I had a boxing coach in college, and the guy's name was Tommy Rawson, and his amateur record was something like 220-2.
Yeah.
And then he had a pro record of like 75-3.
Yeah.
And he avenged two of the losses. So it's like, and then, so this guy was coaching us. He must have been 80 years old. And he was bright and on top of everything and fit as anybody.
Sure. It seems crazy that your body can hold up. You hear that about the Thai fighters, right? Fighting from 13 and they'll have hundreds of fights.
Amazing.
Yeah. I think you got to be technical, right? You got to be good.
It was so funny you should mention that, because we were in Thailand 2 years ago. It was an amazing trip. My wife is Japanese and has family in Japan, so we went for 3 weeks to Japan. And to land in Japan, being a martial artist, to me, and I'm sure John and yourself would get this, it's like you're in the Mecca. You're like, oh, wow. Oh, this is amazing. And it was an honor to be among the Japanese people. So we spent 3 weeks there, and then we went immediately to Thailand. You know, John and Patia to train with Krut Toy. And a couple nights when we were coming from the camp, or coming to eat, you would go through the red light district, because that was the only way to get to the hotel. And you would see, in the open bars, you would see young kids, 10, 12, 14 years old, fighting. And my daughter was shocked. I took my daughter's, and my daughter's like, oh, that's not right. I go, well, first of all, Nicole, you're in their country, number one, and that's their heritage and their culture. And number two, it's a third world country, technically. I think Thailand, you know, gorgeous, beautiful people, but those kids are 22 years old, and they have, like you said, over 100 fights. It's amazing.
That's awesome. So let's see, you did your karate. Oh, then you got into boxing.
Boxing, yeah.
And then what else did you get into? Did you compete in boxing?
I never competed in the boxing ring. No, I never did. But we did, you know, we got many, many rounds. And I trained with boxers for many years, actually, in the gyms. Because, John, you remember, like, I'm going to use you, Connor's mixed martial arts. You could go to Connor's martial arts and learn all the important arts for mixed martial arts, being wrestling, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing, maybe some karate. And you're teaching everything there. But when we were younger, John, we'd have to travel around to, when I was just saying to one of my students, we'd have to go to a Thai gym. You have to go to a wrestling gym. You have to go to a boxing gym. Yeah. Now you have instructors out there like yourself that can teach, even though you're not maybe, you know, an expert at one of those, you know, just enough where you can help somebody. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Where everything is under one roof now. It wasn't like that before. So we travel around and we box at different gyms, and it was a good time. It was on the cutting edge. You know what I mean?
I think so, and I think what you're saying too is that you get instructors like you and me who we're open minded. We realize, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this, and there's a lot of good arts out there, and we don't have to know everything. You know, but we can't know everything.
Yeah, and until recently though. A lot of schools would almost be angry if you went to another school. You know what I mean? It was like you're under one karate
under
instructor,
wing, yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to go to this other school, and they'd be mad at you. Yeah. You know what I mean? It wasn't really accepted to...
Yeah. I mean, you get that. I believe in loyalty. I'm huge on the loyalty aspect, but I also believe that there should be some form of cross-training. You know what I mean?
Right. You got to get better, right?
You have to. You have to. You have to. But you need to be loyal to your instructor. You know what I mean?
Like, yep.
I know, John, you've trained a lot of fighters, and you've had guys with you from the beginning as a white belt, and they're still with you. You know what I mean? But they still train in other places from here to here if they're actively competing. You know what I mean?
Right.
It needs to be like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of benefit in that. They can get a different look that they're not used to seeing. They can get confident and can go, I went over there with those guys, and I did pretty good. And they can get a little bit more confident maybe. Yeah, there's a lot of benefits from it for sure.
Right. Totally agree with that, but I do believe in loyalty too. I think you should be. I've trained with Banana, Giuliano Catino. Daniel Gracie is my jiu-jitsu instructor. I've trained with him and Giuliano for 16 years. I've been with them guys.
Wow.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's awesome.
Always had a great relationship with those gentlemen. They're unbelievable martial artists in their own right. And I've trained with Crew Mark for going on 14 years.
Beautiful.
So, you know what I mean? And I think there's a mutual respect there also, you know what I mean?
Well, I tell you, I'm sure you feel the same way. The older I get and the longer I'm in it, the more I realize that loyalty isn't commonplace.
Yes.
So I appreciate when I see it.
It isn't.
Yeah.
I always tell people, like, especially up-and-coming fighters, John, and I know you've seen this, not with everybody, and I'm not picking on anybody personally, but you see some of these fighters, they get a little full of themselves, and they almost forget where they come from sometimes.
Yeah.
I understand to be a competitive MMA fighter, you almost have to be a little selfish. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally understand that. But don't take it to that next level. You know what I mean? You know, don't forget where you come from, please. And another guy I give credit huge to, and he's really, you might know him, John, his name is Mike Fernandez. He's a black belt under the Deco, but he's a guy that's really under the radar. He's like probably pound for pound one of the best martial artists I've ever trained with.
Wow.
I've trained with him for going 25 years, man. He's one of, matter of fact, he gave me my black belt Hawaiian Kempo.
Very cool.
So he's an awesome guy. Awesome guy. So I try to remember where I come from and always show that respect. You know what I mean? And hopefully my students will do the same.
I think it's the way to go. And martial arts is something you really can't do all by yourself. You know, even though MMA is it's an individual sport, I guess, but the only way to progress is with other people, and you can't do jiu-jitsu by yourself. That's what I tell my students.
Well, this is a team. I think you're right, John. I think it's MMA especially. I think obviously you can't go in the cage and fight for your student or whatever, but it's a team effort for sure, man.
And don't you think there's some guys who do get success, and then they sort of become their own coach, and then that's when they start progressing, and then the game starts to pass them by, you know?
I've seen that a lot of times. It's almost like in my style of karate growing up in the 70s, you never heard of a 10-year-old black belt or a 12-year-old black belt. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? You're cheapening the belt. And I mean, and I know there's a lot of people out there probably listening. Wait a minute. I have a program for kids in black belts. Okay. Well, then call it a junior black belt or go to a brown belt. But come on, man. It takes years and years and years to achieve a black belt, and especially in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right.
You know, I don't know how long it took you, but I think I was 9-10 years to achieve a black belt.
I think that's
in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that's what it takes. Yeah.
I have a saying. I don't know if you, and I'm sure you've probably heard it. I always say, it's a trick question I'll ask people because I love it. I go, how long does it take the average man to receive his Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt? You know this. And someone will say, oh, 10 years. And I go, no. I said, the average man does not receive his Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
I love it.
Because there's a ton of work that goes there. So how does a 10-year-old kid achieve a black belt in karate? That's one thing I just don't get into. You know what I mean? I don't buy it.
Yeah,
you know
I hear you. And I get it because there's so much competition with parents. They all want to have their little kid have a black belt so they can tell the neighbors, and maybe it helps them get into some high school they want to get into or something like this. So there's a lot of almost economic pressure to do that.
I totally understand that.
But I can't do
it. But as a lifelong martial artist, let me give you this quick example. Kylie O'Hearn, one of my students, she beat a girl from American Top Team on her first professional fight. Mm-hmm. Well, the girl's resume, the girl was awesome, but her name's Trisha. But she said she got her black belt at 12 years old. I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed. People were calling me, say, why are you putting your girl against the girl from American Top Team? Well, because American Top Team isn't jumping in the cage with her. I understand that the team effort there, but she's actually going to fight this girl. And I knew by looking at the tape that this girl, Kylie, can beat her. And I had a lot of people calling me going, man, I don't know, Mike, that's a tough fight. I go, it is a tough fight, but she beat her in the second round. But what I'm getting at is the girl, on her resume, was a second-degree black belt at, like, 12 years old. I'm not impressed by that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think most reputable places don't even give those, do they?
No, a lot of places do that, Dan.
A lot of places do that now?
Yeah.
I mean, John, you know more about it than me, probably, like how the rank goes in jiu-jitsu, but you have to be 16 to get a blue belt? Am I
correct.
Wrong?
You're correct, yeah.
Correct, 16.
And then with the kids' belts, they're so convoluted. There's so many stripes, Dan, and so many different colored belts.
Yeah.
It'd take you 15 years, John, just to get to all the kids' belts. So, yeah, you're not getting there until you're 16. Then you get your blue belt, yeah.
Yeah, and I know that the IBJJ changed a lot of the belts just recently, correct, the last year, a couple of years?
Yeah, yeah. They did.
Man,
so there's a lot of kids.
I just like to keep. Yeah. I like this as an adult. Oh, how about this? White, blue, purple, brown, and black. Hey, man, that's easy, man.
It is, right?
Has that changed? I didn't even know that.
Well, not the adults, but the kids' belts did, like John said. They added, and like you said, they put like a striped yellow, you know what I mean, John, right?
Yeah, there's so many levels, Dan. There's like 50 different.
Well, I see the kids want rewards, right? They want to get a reward.
You got to keep them going. Yeah, I think it's not a bad system. I think it's working for them, you know?
Sure, yeah, I get it, but I lose track myself. But it doesn't change the fact that you have to be 16 years old to get your blue belt.
Right.
I get it. That's great.
I think that is
good. Because what does a kid know at 15, 16? I mean, there's some really obviously talented young practitioners out there. I'm not denying that, but not a black belt level, brother.
Right, right. And, you know, I look at the belt as primarily a way to help the student on their path. You know what I mean? And it also
absolutely
kind of recognizes them for the, the work they put in and the mastery that they have attained. But
totally agree with that.
But I wanted to help them, you know. So, you know, students are always going to feel different. So some students are going to feel like, gee, I'm not promoted fast enough. Then others are going to feel, gee, I don't deserve this. He's promoting me too fast. But I always thought that's up to your instructor. You know what I mean? So it's going to feel, it's going to feel light sometimes.
Yes.
It's going to feel heavy sometimes. And you just got to keep your head down and keep working and trying to get better. And if you feel like you're not as good as the rank, then you better just get better.
Well, we have our saying, John, you know this, the belt only covers 2 inches of your waist, of your ass, You better cover the rest. That's true, man.
That's so true. Yes.
That's a fact. That's a fact, because the mats don't lie. The mats don't lie. Now, we could move along, and another thing, I can't speak for you, but I can speak for myself. Around 49 years old, I started a lot of the injuries from fighting and competing. Mm. Have kicked in, and I find myself just like to flow roll now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can go hard if I want to, but I don't know how you. I mean, I'll train hard, but I don't need every match to be a death match anymore. You know what I mean?
No, and I think long term progress, you need some of that kind of more experimental training where you're trying new things. Because if you're trying to win every round, you have to basically stick with your bread and butter, and you can't really expand your game. It's so much more fun. I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, like me and you could roll, I can guarantee you, it'd be a real cool flow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I roll with Mark like that.
Yes.
Because Mark's got a lot of injuries, Crew Mark.
Yeah.
And he's a brown belt under Daniel and Banana. And we don't try to kill each other. It's just like we're flowing. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of fun. I don't need to be hobbling around the mats anymore. I did that enough.
Now, how many pro fights did you have in MMA, Mike?
I had 6 professional MMA fights.
Nice.
And then I fought 3 like super fights, which were when I retired from MMA, which were 10-minute, anything goes except for striking. You know, any submission, toe holds, knee bars, anything, cranks and stuff against.
Yeah.
Pretty good instructors from other schools. So I continue. So I would say 6 professional MMA fights.
Very cool.
And I was older. I was an older guy when I...
You're in your 40s?
I fought my first MMA fight at 44 years old.
That's pretty cool.
John, I did it to test myself, just to test myself. I didn't have any, you know, aspirations to fight another fight or whatever. And I'm going to tell you, it was a fun time because I fought a young kid. There was no commission, so there was no amateur. This kid probably had like 7 amateur fights, and he was I didn't know anything. We didn't really know much about the weight classes, so I came in like at 153. With pants on, and this kid came in at like 156, like with the towel around him. He came in the next day. Oh my God, he was giant. I went, uh-oh. I said, maybe this wasn't a good idea. And I had 10 stitches in my eye prior, 10 days before, and I put makeup over my, it was on my eyelid. I got cut at City of Tom, 10 stitches. And I put makeup, we took the stitches out, and then I put makeup over the cut. And what do you think happened in the first 15 seconds of the fight? The kid hit me exactly where the freaking cut was and opened it up, and it was a mess, dude. A mess. I'm like, how did that happen?
And we were probably fighting in a boxing ring or something at that time, right?
Oh, my God. And the kid beat me. He beat me. But you know what beat me? You know what it would beat me? Adrenaline. The kid didn't beat me. I could have beat that kid. And I don't say that in a prideful way.
Right.
And I don't make an excuse with the cut because the kid was tough and he was a real rough kid. Adrenaline beat me. I remember Mark talking to me in the corner, and he's talking to me and nothing's coming out of his mouth. I'm like, oh man. I said, I am wound up in here, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, adrenaline is a powerful drug, my friends.
So when you fought in your second fight, did you fix that? Did that happen again? Or
And that's exactly why I wanted to fight again. I said, there's no way. No, it wasn't a loss. I was cool with the loss. It's the game, bro.
Yeah.
I said, I am going to try to be in the back room and try to control my emotions. And that's why I did it. And then I went on a 4-fight win streak, all knockouts.
Beautiful.
And it wasn't that. It, for me, the win was to like, wow, big difference now. And I did it by with breathing exercises, just chilling out.
And where did you come up with the breathing exercises? Where
just yoga and different, asking different people and researching. You know what I mean?
Very cool. I remember one of your fights.
It was fun, you know what I mean, to be in the back room. It was night and day, night and day.
That's awesome.
You know, so it was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got a chance to do it. You know what I mean?
I hear you, man. I mean, that's what I try to tell these young guys. I say, listen, you're going to turn around, you're going to be 50 years old, and you're not going to have the chance to do this. So you might as well go for it and enjoy it while you can, man. You know?
Absolutely. And I loved every second of it. You win some, you lose. I lost my first one, and I lost my last one. I got my title taken to me by a 27-year-old kid. I was 47 years old, so it really wasn't a loss for me. You know what I mean? It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And it's nice to – I believe the – to teach the kids the mental game. The night of the fight, it's 90% mental, 10% physical. All day. All the physical preparation is done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've seen guys literally lose it right in the back room because of the adrenaline.
Yeah.
I try to tell these kids, listen, guys, at some point of the night when you're in the back room for 3 hours, as you know, between you in the back room, between you walk out, you're going to have an adrenaline dump, and it's going to be severe. And you need to channel that, because if you don't, you're going to lose it. And sure enough, a lot of these kids come back and go, oh, Loco, you were right. I was walking out there, and everything turned to tunnel vision, and you know what I mean? And they're like, I said, just breathe and chill out, guys. See what you come up with, you know what I mean?
Yeah, very cool.
It's interesting.
And I was going to tell Dan here that I remember seeing one of Mike's fights. I've seen probably a couple of them, and he's a very complete fighter. So obviously a great striker.
Thank you.
And then I saw him get a triangle choke, I think from his guard, and swept the guy to mount. And I don't know.
Yeah, that was a real tough customer from South Shore Sport Fighting, Lee Metcalf, real cool guy that really strong competitor, strong kid, man. It was a great fight, you know what I mean?
And he fought everybody, too. Man. Like, he wasn't protecting his record or anything. You know, he fought a lot of tough guys, yeah.
No, Lee Metcalf was still, I'd love to see him come back. He was a real rough customer, man. Looked like little Mike Tyson.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now, was that finish an arm bar or striking, or what? How did that actually finish? Do you remember
how I finished him? I finished him with it was funny, man, because the commission, they let a lot of go, as you know.
Yeah.
As I caught him in a triangle, I set up a nice setup off my back, and I think he kind of went out. And so when he went out, the ref didn't see it. So as he was slumping, I flipped him over, and I landed in the triangle on the top, and I started pity-patting with punches. And Crew Mark he's a funny guy. He goes, what the F are you doing? Punch him. And I went, oh, my God. And the light punches, I think, actually woke the kid up. And then I hammered him with, like, six hard punches, bro. And I was like, I really didn't want to do that. I was hoping the ref would stop it, but he wasn't stopping it.
Right.
So then I hammered him with, like, some bad punches. So I think he was unconscious for a little while on the back.
Gotcha.
So I don't like to hurt anybody like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like to see that. But, and Mark yelled at me, he goes, don't ever do that again. It's the referee's job to stop that fight. And he's right.
And, you know, I'm sure the refs are probably, not to criticize that ref, but they're probably better today than they were back then, maybe.
Absolutely. They've got the better training, you know, like Kevin does those courses now, you know what I mean? Kevin McDonald, he's one of the best in the business, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
And he teaches those courses. So I think, like you said, the training for the referees is they're on top of stuff a lot.
If I remember right,
you know what I mean?
10, 15 years ago, the refs had almost no training, right? They just get someone from a gym to come in.
You know what? They have the guys in there.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd get somebody who had some martial arts experience, but not necessarily in
I remember there was MMA. Refs that didn't even have MMA experience, right? Like or jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's just a third man in the ring, man. Yeah. But it's all good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I always, the men that I've fought in there, I have an utmost respect for them, because I believe when you share the cage or the ring or how, you know, boxing or whatever combat sport, Muay Thai, with another fellow combatant, you leave something in there with them.
And you bond with them a little bit.
I see the guys, a bond. Yeah. And I see guys win or lose that I fought, and it's a mutual respect. Right? I like that in the martial arts. You know what I mean?
I do.
That respect.
I do. The only thing I'm emphasizing with my guys now, Mike, tell me what you think about this, is to prepare right. Like people say sometimes, well, it's a victory just to get in the cage. And I'm like, I understand the sentiment there, but if you know you're going to get in the cage in 8 weeks, you should be getting yourself as ready as you can for that.
Absolutely.
8 weeks,
there's no joke in there, man.
Yeah.
I mean, people are getting hurt now. Let's face it. Look, in the professional ranks, it's a crying game. It's a hurting game.
It's no fun, right? When you see somebody in there who you like, your friend, and now that you're a coach, you got these younger people. So that at some respects, they're almost like a son or daughter to you, I'm sure. So if they're on the worst, if they're on the worst end of it, that's a pretty lousy feeling, right?
Well, the girl I mentioned, she's in the back seat right now. The girl I mentioned, Kylie, she's 21 years old. She's been training with me since she's been 11 years old.
There you go.
She's like a daughter. I have two daughters. She's like my third daughter. Like she's that pain in the ass, my third daughter. You know what I mean? So obviously, I don't want to see her get hurt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's like a daughter to me.
Yeah.
And some of the boys that I've trained with, the boys that have trained with me that are grown men now, have trained with me, and I know you have kids the same, John.
Yeah.
They've trained with me for 5-6 years since they were little boys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I really, listen, even, John, I've competed against your guys. We've competed numerous times, and there's a mutual respect there. Let me tell you something. Of course you want to win, of course I want to win, but I don't want to see someone hurt to the point where they're like, they're hurt.
Yeah, that's,
you know what I mean?
Like, cool.
Okay, choke them out. Let's get the win. But I don't want to see someone go into the hospital. And to me, that's not the sporting. You know what I'm saying, man?
Exactly. What about this? Sometimes you got somebody that comes back to the corner and it's tough. You know what I mean? And there's always that fine line of like, do I just give them a push to keep going, or do we stop now?
Yeah,
like,
I've seen that.
Remember, like, like Pettis had his hand broken.
Has he had enough? I don't know.
Yeah. That's so tough as a coach. Like, how do you sort that out and figure out what's the best advice you can give? You know,
I look at it like this. This is how I look at it. I can be tough in the corner, I'll be honest with you, but because I know when someone's hurt, you know.
Right.
And you know, and I'm saying, obviously, no names. I've had guys that have quit on me.
Mm.
I've seen them quit. I know when they quit.
Right.
And I know when opponents of my guys have quit. I watch it in their eyes. I see it. They quit. They checked out. If I see something like that, I'm going to get on them. Now, if they're really hurt, I get it.
Right.
I get it. Okay. And I don't mind. I don't mind if one of my students, I always say, give me 100%. Just give me 100% out there. If you get caught, you get caught.
Right.
But don't quit on me, man.
Mm.
Please, don't quit on me in there. It all depends on the person and what the circumstances at that time, John. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
at
the, in the fight, you know what I mean?
And
like
what they're capable of doing too, right? You got to consider that.
Right.
Case,
and I know some of these kids because I've been training them for years.
Right.
And there's been times where I've got in and I go, what are you doing in there? I said, let's do it. I said, you are not giving me 100%. It's time to move it along, son. And that's enough to win the fight. I've had that. I've had kids come to me, local, I'm tired. Well, guess what? Your opponent's tired. Get in there. Let's go, man.
Yeah.
He's tired too, man.
I think when you have a coach that you respect telling you that, that can actually energize the guy, right? They can make
absolutely. And I've seen guys when I've given them that pep talk. To me, and John, I think you'll agree with this. To me, the best corner guy in the business and that I've ever cornered with is Mark Delagrotti.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I mean, I know there's some great coaches out there. You're a great coach. I've seen you in action. I think Mark has a special something. A knowledge, a special reading, and he knows just what to say at the right time. And I study him, man. Believe me, I study what he says and what he does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now let me ask you something.
I learned from him. You know.
Let me ask you something else, Coach.
Sure.
When you got, especially your amateur fighters, right? You're looking to match him up. It's hard, right? Because you got to find a worthy opponent.
Yes.
But somebody that isn't out of your person's league, out of your athlete's league, right? You got to find that right place, right?
Sure. I'm funny. This is the way I do it. Listen, let me ask you this. Do you like to lose, John?
Oh, my God, yeah. Especially in MMA. I mean, losing, I don't like to lose in checkers. MMA is about
like
a million times worse, yeah.
But in this game, you better be a good loser. You better learn how to lose because it's going to happen. This is a game of variables, and there's many variables. But what I try to do with the Amis, I try to be fair. As a coach, I like to look. I'd rather take one of my kids that hasn't fought and find someone that's either 1-0 or 0-1.
Right.
Or 1-1. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you get a look at
them.
Yeah.
Because some of these guys, okay, we don't know who it is. Say I'm fighting someone from your school. Let's just say, well, I don't know who this kid. This kid could be a monster, dude.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Could be Mike Tyson's first fight.
Try.
Yeah.
And then let me add to that. I usually, for Amis, try not to pick someone from Connors MMA.
Right.
South Shore, Lausanne's, Triforce, or any of the more successful schools in New England. I'm just using a few names right up there. Because I know for a fact, okay, I get it. Yeah, okay. They're bringing in guys that are going to be really good. I get it. I mean, we want fair fights. I just like to get a kid a couple good under his belt. You know what I mean? Maybe a couple wins. You know what I mean?
Some experience. Does that make sense? Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And then at some point, and I can use, like with Kylie, I use her a lot because she got a big fight coming up. I can't announce it yet, but it's a big fight for her.
That's awesome.
For a 21-year-old girl.
Wow.
At some point, you've got to step up and go, okay, we need a test. If you plan on, if you think you're going to the next level, you need a test.
Right, because I always figure if you just keep winning easy fights, at some level your nervous system starts saying, oh, we're expecting easy. So then all of a sudden if something not easy shows up, you might not be ready for it, right?
Exactly. Somebody at some point, now what does that mean? 3 fights, 4 fights, 5, 6 fights? I don't know. I guess it all depends on the student or the fighter. But at some point, you got to have a test to see where you actually are.
I think so. And, you know, so I have a fighter here, Jesse McGillicott, that fought, I think it's 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he won a very tough fight. Oh, yeah, I was talking to you about it.
Who
yeah.
was that kid he fought? Who
Ray
was
Shoddy.
Who was the kid he fought?
Ray Shoddy.
I didn't know. Did he beat Ray?
He beat Ray, yeah. It was.
Now, did I tell you Ray was tough? Was I wrong?
You were right. Very tough guy. He came very prepared. He was ready to knock some blocks off. And he never really quit, even though he kind of got the worst of it, especially the last round. But he hung in there. It was 2 judges gave it 30-27. 1 judge gave Ray the first round 29-28. But it was a grueling, grueling fight. So you know how the fight game is.
I believe it.
You can win 30-27, and it's the hardest fight you've ever had in your life.
Oh, you know? Absolutely, dude.
And McGillicott had a grueling victory. But I said to him, you're going to be so much better now. Just having come out the other side of that, you know, a really
that
tough
kid's a
fight.
Beast, man. I remember that was the kid with long hair at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's had long hair. He's been all over the weight chart too. Yeah, but he's at 85 and he's doing really well.
Oh.
Yeah, he's been with me for 12 years probably. Yeah,
he's been with you a long time.
Yeah,
man.
He started with me when he was 15. He grew up living just with his mom, and I used to pretty much just pick him up and take him to the gym, and he trained every day with us, and he's a great guy. Yeah, great martial
arts. Nice kid.
Yeah, good kid, definitely.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's a great game, though, man. I love this sport, man.
That's the problem with it, though. Once you get into the sport, no other sport's going to work for you, right? Because you just get spoiled. It's just so exciting, and the highs are so high, and the lows are low. You know what I mean?
It's crazy, dude. And that's why you've got to have a balance, John. As you know, you're not going to win every fight.
Right.
You are not going to win every fight. I mean, it's, you know that. I mean, I've lost some tough fights, man. On my own and students, it's like, how did we lose that?
you make a mistake at that high level, it's a wrap.
Yeah. Once you become a professional with a certain amount of fights under your belt, there's no more easy fights. Every fight is
no more easy
really
fight.
Hard.
Who's the kid? Remember Chip Mirazza Pollard?
Of course,
Chip,
yeah.
The surgeon?
Yeah.
Well, Chip, I cornered Chip for probably 15 MMA fights. Okay, the kid's a four-time world Muay Thai champion.
Yeah.
World Muay Thai champion, not a New England champion, a world. His striking was always sick. Like, he come from a Goju black background, mm-hmm. got into boxing, trained with me when he was a kid. This kid was just, he just got it. You know what I mean? He could have went anywhere and become who he is. He's done it on his own. And he trains with Mark a lot, obviously, now. But he would lose at times in MMA because he didn't work his ground game as much as he would his stand-up.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? So there were some tough times where he was beating the heck out of people, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they get him down. And he was good on the ground. He wasn't – look, don't let me kid – don't think that he was a bum on the ground. He was decent on the ground, but not on the level as he was standing up. So,
oh, yeah. I watched him on Facebook, some of his videos. Dan, you should see this guy's Muay Thai. Unbelievable. Like, highlight reel is something else.
He sparred Sanchai.
Yeah.
At Lazon's, when they did a seminar there 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, and Sanchai put the video up of him and Chip twice.
Wow.
They were playing patty pat, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it was like, oh, look at this. Chip got a couple in on Sanchai. It's in the video.
That's awesome.
And they weren't going hard.
Yeah.
Sanchai is probably, wouldn't you say, arguably one of the best Muay Thai fighters in the world today?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. So Chip is on that level. But make a long story short, so he got sick of getting taken down. He goes, I'm going to do Muay Thai, and he becomes a four-time world champion. Pretty impressive.
I think so. It's very impressive.
You ever met him, John?
You know what? I think I was coaching Brett O'Terry when Brett O'Terry fought him in MMA.
You did, man. Was that a great fight, dude?
Well, that's what you were talking about. Brett just kept dragging the guy down, and
unbelievable.
And Chip wants to win on his feet, but
with a liver shot.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But Brett O'Terry, now there's a guy, right, who I admire. I admire his grit. You know what I mean? He's not the most beautiful fighter to watch, dude, but he's got a heart as big as a lion.
He went out there. He took a lot of tough fights. That's for sure. And now,
damn right, man. I respect that.
Yeah, and now he's competing in jiu-jitsu a lot, I think, and doing really well, of course.
Yeah, man. And you did. It was. We were. I believe that was Mohegan Sun.
Yeah. Fought. That must have been.
Was
maybe Bellator or
wasn't
something?
It?
I don't know. A reality.
Wasn't that awesome, man? What a great fight that was.
Now let me ask you this: I see you at all the events.
Sure.
And what I like about Mike is he's obviously technically superior and does a great job of preparing his guys, but he also really cares about all the fighters and athletes. You know what I mean? He has that insight as
kids.
A fighter. Yeah, and I can see it.
Love these kids. I have a kid with me now that is one of my students. I just gave him a stripe today on his white belt. He's a four-stripe white belt.
Nice.
Martial arts has changed this kid's whole life around.
That's awesome.
And I've kind of taken him under his wing. He's, and he's just a great kid. You know what I mean? And I've seen not what I've done, but what martial arts have done. And he loves Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I do care for these kids. And I think, as I get older, I like to work with the kids more than the fighters. Is that right? Does that sound right? You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. Yeah, definitely. Now let me ask you this. So when you're in all these events, or obviously when you're at Sitya Tong, when you're in Junico,
sure.
and when you're at Cage Titans or wherever you're at, you're flying around the world cornering people,
sure.
you get respect. People see you. They either know who you are or they can estimate, and people are very respectful to you,
right.
I imagine.
Absolutely.
Do you ever find
Absolutely.
Yourself out getting a slice of pizza someplace and people are not respectful to you? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know what it is. And I've heard stories. Obviously, you know Big John Johnson. He's a scary, scary guy.
Yeah.
And he'd tell me stories like with guys with, like, I am.
Who would I him?
I don't know what it is. I
think
really,
the big guys sometimes set off the radar for other big guys. And they
I don't
go.
Know what it is.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. I'd fight anybody in my heyday. I probably wouldn't pick John Jones.
No, no.
Fight, dude.
I might do a drive-by shooting, but yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a scary, scary individual to look at and to watch him in action. He is a...
Yeah, I don't know how anybody could look at him and come up with some assessment that he wasn't a capable fighter. You know what I mean? He could just stand there and you'd go, I wouldn't want to get hit in any way, shape, or form by that guy.
No, that's a dangerous guy, and he's got a heart of a lion. But I really, when I go out, I like to take my wife out dancing, maybe for a cocktail here and there, and maybe for a slice of pizza, like you said. I maybe it's just my demeanor. I don't have people eyeing me, or it's been a long last time I ever had to use my martial arts training for a real situation was probably 10 years ago. I had a kid when I worked in the freezers attack me in there. He was on drugs and he attacked me from behind, and it wasn't a good thing for him within 7 seconds.
And what
it was bad?
Was he just delusional, or he was mad at you for something or some?
He was delusional, and he was doing cocaine, from what I heard afterwards. And he was, that probably made him even more delusional.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know, man. It's not a good thing to be doing. But he attacked me from behind because he knew I was a martial, and I think he wanted to test himself.
Oh, right, right.
And I kept saying, listen, bro, I said, if you want to train, we can come to the gym. And but I was trying to be kind to the kid, and he took my kindness for weakness. And that was 10 years ago. But I, you know what I mean? And I really have had any, you know, like a situation where I've had to even like threaten anybody or even kind of like, listen, man, that's it. Maybe I'm lucky. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Well, I think so. I think you're living a healthy life too. You know, I tell people that come in for self-defense, I say, you know, you should train martial arts, but, you know, stay away from last call in bar rooms and don't get out of your car.
I mean,
if somebody gives you the finger, just let it go. And so if you don't get out of your car and road rage and don't be at last call.
That's a go-to right there. It's like, I mean, I don't know why people want to escalate things. It's kind of like, I don't know, man. I just try to, like, I've been fortunate. And I'm not a troublemaker. I mean, I'm not a troublemaker. I mean, you know what I mean? You're a former professional. Let's put it this way. If you get in a situation out on the street, you better make sure that you're in the right, because a guy like you or myself is going to be dragged into court, and it's not going to be good for us.
Right. The average person and citizen who doesn't know anything about martial arts, they would think
it's not a good thing. And then they're going to say, well, wait a minute. You couldn't walk away from this. You're a former professional fighter and a trainer of fighters. You're going to be...
It'd just be embarrassing too, Mike, wouldn't it? Like, that you got involved in something. I would be embarrassed. Yeah. So I hope
it is embarrassing. It's like, well, why did you let that happen? You should know better. Now, there's been a few times I see where you got let me count to 10.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I really had that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Been any kind of that. And I'm really good. I think what I'm really good at is de-escalating things. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
I think I'm good at that, and I think that's the way to be anyways. You know what I mean? I wish more people were like that, I guess. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Now, you haven't you can't announce something. You referenced a fight that you can't talk about yet, but do you have any fights coming up that you can talk about? That sounds exciting.
I have a couple kids on the Cage Titans.
In January.
In January, yeah.
Nice. I love that event, man. It's such a great venue.
That's a fun time. Mike Bovaer and Jimmy Birchfield put on one of the best shows around for
Definitely.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
Top notch.
And so you got a couple guys in Cage Titans. Amateurs or?
Couple good. Amateurs, yep.
Nice.
Yep, amateurs. And then I have Kylie O'Hearn fighting. And I'll probably announce that. I don't know if I can. I don't think I can announce it yet.
Right.
Not finalized, but I'm hoping by next week we can get it out there and promote it. It's going to be, if it goes through, it's going to be a real cool fight.
Awesome. Now, do you do private lessons if somebody wanted to learn?
I do, sir.
Yeah. So how do they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through Facebook or my Instagram.
Great. And then they can meet you either in Hanover or Hyannis.
I do my lessons at my home. I have a full
at
gym
your house.
In my home.
Awesome.
So it's a real nice one-on-one situation. And we have a lot of fun. Like tomorrow, I do a few right in the morning, and we go from there.
Very. And what town are you in, Mike?
I'm in Bourne,
Bourne
on the Cape.
So, Mike, I think we're going to wrap it up. I really appreciate you giving us your time today, man. It was great to talk to you.
Hey, listen, I had a wonderful time.
Awesome.
I appreciate it. John, I got a lot of respect for you and what
likewise,
you do with your
sure.
with the kids and your school. And you've always been a win or lose. You've always been a solid competitor and a great coach. And I respect that.
Thank you, Mike. That means a lot coming for you, for sure. Thank you so much.
I appreciate
much.
It. Dan, nice to meet you
nice
also,
meeting
sir.
You.
Okay, Mike, have a great weekend. Rest of your weekend, man. And folks, reach out to Mike Goresh down at Bourne. You're not going to find a more experienced martial artist or a better coach or better trainer. And
I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. And please share this podcast, subscribe to it, rate it, and review it. And we'll talk to you folks next week.